Welcome to the Great Coaches Podcast.
To me, being perfect is not about that scoreboard out there.
This is a chance of a lifetime.
When you can understand the person, you can then work towards a common goal.
We are all on the same team.
Know your role and do it to the best of your ability.
Focus on the fundamentals. We've gone over time and time again.
Your defense has got to be better.
Leave no doubt tonight.
Great moments are born from great opportunity.
My name is Paul Barnett, and you are listening to the Great Coaches Podcast, where we explore leadership through the lens of high-performance sport by interviewing great coaches from around the world to try and find ideas to help all of us be better leaders. Our great coach on this episode is former lacrosse player and now coach Greg Cannella. As a player, Greg was a high school All-American and an All-American while at Nassau Community College. After graduating, he spent time as an assistant at Stony Brook before becoming head coach at his alma mater, the University of Massachusetts, in 1993. Since then, he has gone on to achieve 8 NCAA tournament berths, 8 New England championships, 4 ECAC championships, 5 New England Coach of the Year honours, and was named National Coach of the Year in 2006 when he guided the Minutemen to the program's first NCAA championship game appearance. In 2019, he was inducted into the USA Lacrosse Hall of Fame. Some of the highlights of the interview with Greg are his view that many great coaches know when to turn up and turn down the intensity, how the responses of the coach to challenges have an impact on the emotional state of the team, how when dealing with people who are over-eager to prove themselves, you shouldn't take their passion away, but instead should seek to influence them, and wanting to leave a legacy of respect and gratitude. And just before we go to the interview with Greg, if you would like to send us any feedback, or if you know a great coach who has a unique story to share, then we would love to hear from you. All the details on how to contact us are on the show notes or on our website, thegreatcoachespodcast.com.
You're listening to the Great Coaches Podcast.
Greg Cannella, hello and welcome to the Great Coaches Podcast.
Thanks so much, Paul. It's great to be with you.
It's great to be talking to you too. And I might just start by asking you, what are those plaques that I can see all behind you on the wall?
Yeah, those are All-America plaques. The guys that have come through the program that have attained that status and obviously get their plaque up on the wall. Very prestigious award for any college athlete to become a USILA All-America. I mean, that's, you know, you're the best of the best in college lacrosse. It's fitting that they're sitting behind me right now because I definitely wouldn't be here unless it was those guys out there doing everything for us as a program.
Well, we're going to talk about all those All-Americans that you've coached and also the fact that you've been one too. But I want to start with a really hard-hitting question. Where are you in the world and what have you been doing so far today?
Well, today it's Thursday here. So today, this morning, you get up and I work out in the morning before I head into work, get in the office around 8 a.m. after a workout. We're preparing for practice. We have an early practice on Tuesdays and Thursdays. So our guys are out on the field at 10:15. And so we're out there for practice. And right now we're in a shortened part of our season. We call it 8 hours, which is in a technical sense, that's the amount of time we can spend with them during the week. There is a 20-hour segment that would be our in-season. So we're sort of out of season now. So we had about a half hour of coaching lacrosse skills today, no contact today. And then our strength coach came out and did a half hour of speed training with the guys. We have a fantastic, Antoine Harris is a tremendous speed coach for us and strength and conditioning coach. And then they follow him up to the weight room for about a 45-minute workout with the weights. So pretty busy day. And now I'm fortunate to be with you, be on with you.
Well, thank you for carving out some time. We do like hearing more and more about lacrosse. I must admit, I do like the physical aspect of it as much as the skill aspect of it. But I'd like to maybe just start, Greg, by asking you about some of the great coaches that you've worked with. And in researching you, I can see that there's Dick Garber, John Espy, and there's Tony Seaman. And they're three icons of lacrosse in America. But from this experience, watching these great coaches up close and perhaps seeing other coaches that aren't so great in your time at the university, what do you think sets the great ones apart from the rest?
It's a great question. First off, extremely fortunate to have had Dick Garver, Tony Seaman, work with John Espy. I don't want to leave out Larry Glenns, who was my high school coach, and Rich Speckman. When I went to Nassau Community College, he was my coach as well. All of them are Hall of Fame coaches. So, I mean, I was very lucky. When I look at the experience of, say, my own son, it wasn't even close in terms of the coaches that he had during his career. So I think what sets them apart is they all possess a want to give, right? They're interested in helping people. Most of them are all educators as well as coaches. You know, you're educating, you know, Coach Garber educated us through lacrosse. I mean, he was a true professional, but it was coaching life skills through lacrosse, right? And he let the guys play and the guys allowed them to show their ability, right? So that was unique about him. Tony Seaman was an innovator. We were doing interval training back in the late 70s, early 80s. For our sport, a 10-man ride is a specific X and O element, as well as the invert. And I think, you know, he was the guy that was in the forefront of that. So innovation was his thing. John Espy, when I joined on with John Espy at the University of Stony Brook in New York, John was elevating the program there from a Division III level, a lower level, up to the Division I level. And he was a tremendous motivator, but he was a tremendous leader to be able to do that, to bring the program into new heights, and very unique way to do it. My high school coach, Larry Glenns, who I loved dearly, visited with him a couple weeks back. He actually came and spoke to our team. He was a player's coach. He wanted to know every single guy, all right? He wanted to know what made them tick. Guys loved playing for him because he took special interest in the individuals. Now, he was a great coach as well. He knew when to turn up the intensity. But I had never had someone like that. And, you know, it was a different experience for me because the way I was raised, my dad was a coach as well. The way I was raised was very different, very rigid. And this was very different from that. This was encouraging, right? This was, hey, we're doing this together. He made sure we knew we were together, learned so many lessons from him. And then Rich Speckman, when you work at a community college, the team changes from year to year, I mean, drastically, right? So a community college is a two-year school. And so the half the team, or maybe even more than half the team, leaves every year. And so where we coach at UMass, it's a four-year, right? It's a four-year tenure. So Coach Speckman did a great job in molding the team every year and made you play together. And the individuals were from rival towns in New York. York on Long Island. And so you know, you thought you hated these guys, but then 2 weeks later, you had to love those guys and respect those guys in order to play together. That wasn't an easy thing to do, especially with the egos of many of the athletes that you see out there. So again, they all had something special about them that made them great. And again, my experience with those guys, I tried to take something from them all. My ideals and my beliefs of coaching, certainly the roots are with these guys.
Greg, you mentioned your father there. He was a football and a lacrosse coach, as well as becoming the school principal. Now, I can imagine he must have, like all parents, had some influence on you and given you some lessons. But I was really keen to understand, was there anything that you had to unlearn from your father when you became a head coach?
Yeah, I think I just mentioned it, right? When Dad grew up, he played football and lacrosse at Cortland State in upstate New York. Was really a football player, and his roommates that played football convinced him to play lacrosse. And then a football coach at my high school, Lumbrick High School on Long Island. And they actually outlawed spring football. That was a thing you did, right? You played football in the fall, but you had spring practice. They outlawed it, a state rule. And so he started lacrosse, and they would pick up the sticks and play lacrosse for a half hour, throw the sticks down and hit the blocking dummies and coach football for the next hour. In the spring. But, you know, again, his era was very different. It's the era of the hard asses as coaches. You know, you think of Vince Lombardi, right? You know, Bear Bryant, these iconic people. Those guys were tough coaches. And my dad, that was his way. It was my way or the highway kind of guy. And again, it was very rigid. So what I learned was you have to be flexible, right? Not everyone's the same. You can't treat the first player and the 15th player the same way. They may be totally different. They may learn differently, right? They may take criticism differently, right? They may take praise differently. So you have to be flexible and you have to get to know your guys. You know, it didn't take any passion away from the way that I coached, with the energy that I coached, that I know my dad coached with it as well. But it just gave me a better understanding of, hey, these kids are different. This isn't the 1950s or 60s. You have to give them water breaks. You know, I talked to my dad, they wouldn't give them water breaks for 2 days, probably, you know, back then. But just to know that it was, you were coaching a different type of athlete and a different type of person as well. And I had to be flexible with that and try to mold individuals into something, you know, to come to some common ground, right? To get a critical mass to a spot where we were all in agreement on what we were doing.
Well, in 1993, you went back to your alma mater, you went to UMass and you worked under Dick Garber as an assistant coach. And when you're reflecting on it, I've got this great quote from you. You say, I was full of a lot of anger, a lot of trying to get out there and prove myself as a coach. There's a lot of people listening, Greg, who will have support staff in their teams, either work, social, corporate, community, who also fit that description. But based on your experience, working out that anger, moving beyond it, what advice would you have for people who might be managing someone like you were in 1993?
What a great question that is. I would say let them be. Let them set their own path. I know that Coach Garber, I actually worked with Ted Garber, who was Dick Garber's son, when I came back to UMass as an assistant, and mentor those folks to be professionals. This is how things are done. You know, I was told you're a college coach. You're here at the University of Massachusetts. What a great place it is. Let some of that stuff go, right? And I had a chip on my shoulder because I felt like I was a decent enough coach to be hired before UMass stepped in and hired me, right? So I always wanted to prove myself. And I think every coach in the world, the history of coaching, wants to prove themselves. But again, don't take anyone's passion away, like just mentioned before. Allow them to work through that. Encourage them to continue to be a strong influence on the people that you coach. And again, that's what professionalism is.
So you go on from there, and at 29, you're appointed head coach of the University of Massachusetts, which is a pretty big thing at a very young age. What were some of those early lessons? They could have come from successes or failures that you had then that went on to become a core part of your philosophy.
Thinking back, probably like believing in yourself and trusting your own instincts. You know, as a young guy, there was a lot of doubt, right? As a young coach, and, you know, and the older coaches tried to intimidate me on the sidelines or at the conventions. I can remember coaches saying, oh, you're coming to my place this year, you know, that sort of thing. But believe in yourself, trust your instincts, believe in your own ability, and believe in your ability to reach people. And I think the communication part of it was easy for me because I was young and I wasn't that far away from these guys. So I knew how to build a strong relationship with younger guys, right? It's probably a little bit more difficult now for me, not that I'm old, but as an older coach, right, to relate or for these guys to look at me and go, wow, you know, coach is cool. He gets us, you know, he understands us. But it's also that I learned that if you're going to be successful in any walk of life, you have to work hard at it. If you believe in something and you want something, it's not going to come easy. And there's going to be a lot of ups and downs. You have to persevere through those ups and downs and, you know, try to stay as positive as you can with yourself, but also as positive as you can with the people that you work with.
Did it take you long to get the balance right between driving for success and keeping some semblance of a normal family life?
That's really the hardest part. And be quite honest with you, that's really maybe the only regret that I have getting into coaching is missing a lot of my kids and their lives, right? You know, you have 45 kids here that you're in charge of and following their lives. And you work in season, you work a lot. You work from, you know, 6:30 in the morning till 8 o'clock at night. And when the kids were young, you missed a lot. You missed dinners. You got home to put them to bed, read them a book, but you missed athletic events, gymnastics meets, soccer games, right? Lacrosse games. You missed all that. And those things you don't get back. Again, over time, you know, as I get older into high school, especially my own kids, I was able to kind of back off a little bit in what I did and change our practice schedule around a little bit to be able to see them compete and be with them a little bit more. With my wife, who is every coach has the best assistant in the world, and that's their wife. And really, she's the head coach at home. So it's really hard to, in a relationship, to leave the office and leave everything there. You bring everything with you as a coach. And so that probably took me more time than anything, is to try to separate what I was doing here, the emotions that I had here, and then go home and be a husband and be a father and take care of the emotions, right, and the feelings and everything at home. Not easy, right? Not easy. And again, that is probably even now still a work in progress, that you still have the desire when you coach, right, to do the best job you possibly can. That's probably everybody, right? I think that's in coaching. And there's times where you still sacrifice your family time for what you do here in the office and what you do here on the field.
I wanted to talk a bit about emotional control, actually, because I have another really interesting quote from you. And you say, I conduct myself the same way, whether we're 15-0 or 0-15. I coach the same. I approach it the same. I'm no different. It sounds great on paper, and I'm just wondering.
Sure does. It's a lot easier when you're 15-0.
Yeah, I guess it would be. And it must take a lot of emotional control to not be too high and not be too low. And I'm wondering what you've learned about the importance of remaining consistent, of having this emotional control in good times and bad times when it comes to leadership.
Yeah, especially early on, I probably overreacted to many of the situations, whether it be conduct, team conduct, the effort that the team was giving, what we were doing out there on the field, our performances, right, in games, right, losing my cool. So I think over time, you learn that everyone's looking at you. Every player is looking at you, and how are you going to respond to these situations? And if you respond accordingly, they'll relax and they'll fall in and they'll be fine, right? But if you lose it, whether that's with officials or whether that's with the team itself, and stop coaching them, they're going to fold. They're not going to give a great effort. So stay the course. You learn to stay the course. You learn to understand and believe in the process, right? There's a process for us. It's a yearly process from September until May. For our players, it's a four-year process, right? For us as coaches, it's not only an every-year process, but it's a career process. So you have to believe in that. You know, just remember what got you there, right? And we always talk about whether we win or whether we lose. Obviously, there's things that we can't control. So sometimes the ball bounces the wrong way for us, right? Or somebody on the other team makes an incredible play. We can't control that, right? What we control is us. And what we do talk about in those situations, 15-0, 0-15, win or lose, is the Alamo. And what is our Alamo, right? Where do we, after a game, where do we go back to? What do we fall back onto? Or what are our core values that we can fall back onto? And, you know, we're very specific in what those are from year to year. The team kind of establishes those. We have our own as a program, but it's something that it's a reminder for the guys. Again, whether you win and then whether you lose, listen, you lose a game and hopefully we can be more successful than that. But you lose, hey, let's regroup. Where are we? This is who we are. Let's not forget that. We win, we have to do the same thing. Let's not forget who we are, right? Because if we feel like we're something that we're not, we get a little too high on our horse, someone's going to knock us down. So again, you know, don't bail on what you believe in. Hang in there, right? Win or lose, go back to the Alamo and revisit those core values.
Tell us about the Alamo and the core values that are keeping the tent in the middle up.
Yeah, there's a lot of them. I think in general here at UMass, it's one of hard work, right? It's something that we can't get around. You know, I was raised that way. You know, we were a blue collar family. My dad was a teacher. My mom didn't work. There was five of us, five boys. It wasn't, you know, upper crust stuff. So you learn to work hard. You learn to go mow lawns and make some extra money or shovel walks in the wintertime. So I can't help but portray that. That's who I am. So that's the way we're going to be. But we also want a group that has a tremendous attitude towards success, right? And that could be in everything. That could be towards our education. That could be us in relationships. That could be us, you know, in practice, in the weight room, everywhere, right? And have a really, really good attitude and a positive attitude about what we're doing and know why we're doing it. But also we need to be a together group. And I think I mentioned that each and every year, the leadership has to pull us together where we can. And if someone kind of slips out of that, we have the ability to pull them back in and really keep everybody together on that. And I think that kind of fosters a never give up attitude. If I can, you know, as a coach or a player, if I can influence the team in a positive manner where you, Paul, would turn and look at me and go, because of Greg, I will never, ever give up. And, you know, the next person's doing that for somebody else. If we're that together, we're going to be a success regardless of what the school board says. So hopefully we have that. I think the last thing is the relationships. I spoke a little bit about it before, developing those relationships, but we want them to be authentic. And I think that with this generation that we're coaching now, with everything that's going on in social media. These guys are influenced by so many people and so many things out there that when they have conversations, if they have conversations, let's have authentic conversations. Let's talk about each other's families. Let's talk about what we're interested in. Let's talk about what we love, or what we embrace. Let's talk about how we feel today. Let's talk about how we're getting ready for the game and be really true to those relationships. We actually know somebody. And, you know, when game time comes, and, you know, you and I are standing next to each other in a game and the spam's hitting the fan, right? And we're not doing well. We look at each other and all we have to do is nod and smile and we got this. And that's really, I think, what every coach wants. I really do. But certainly that's what we try to foster the best that we can as coaches here.
Greg, you've got such a smile on your face as you talk through the values of the team. And on the minute ago, you talked about being the same, whether it's 15-0 and 0 or 15. But I wanted to ask you, when do you feel most productive as a leader?
I would say, and truly feel this way, when I see the guys 5, 6, 7, 10 years later, right? And they talk to me about, they introduce me to their kids, or they talk about their families.
Yeah.
That's what does it for me, how they've moved on and been so successful.
I can see the pure emotion and energy as you talk about it. But I'd like to maybe switch gears, because I've got another quote from you that caught my eye. And you say, I think for a lot of people, especially a lot of young coaches that have played at a high level, it's difficult because they're always comparing the players to themselves or to past and former teammates. Mm-hmm. Now, you were an All-American and you played at a high level. So it made me wonder what biases you've had to learn to control most as a coach.
Yeah, it's probably, again, as I mentioned before, that, you know, don't judge, get to know people. You may have a perception of a young person in semester one, and in semester eight, they may be totally different because they've gone from 18 years old to 22 years old during that time. And there's a ton of growth, right? And, you know, to us as coaches, growth is paramount. And you have to sometimes even, I would say, put yourself in their shoes and live their life for a day and imagine what they're going through in terms of the academic workload and the athletic workload, and they're in relationships, everything else that's going on in their lives for our seniors, you know, looking for jobs and worried about the future. But really, again, allow yourself to get to know those people and try not to compare yourself to them, or try not to compare other players' team. As you mentioned, it's unfair. Again, you can use them as examples, especially when you talk about certain individuals and maybe what their work rate was or their attitude was, or tremendous attitude, or their leadership ability was. But again, you can talk about it, but don't compare, because I think it's unfair. And I think it puts a lot of pressure on certain individuals. They may feel like they have to live up to this. And sometimes, and I think because of UMass and the tremendous tradition that was before me and since, some guys come in feeling that pressure. They already are aware of not the ghosts, but the people that were here before them. And, you know, as we talk about their responsibility to not only respect those folks, but also to represent those folks, that could be a lot for a guy that's 17, 18 years old, right? To take in while they're transitioning. So again, talk to them, have a great relationship with them rather than compare them constantly to others.
Talk about this great tradition at UMass. Imagine there must be a lot of pressure on you and the team to make sure that you're bringing in the right people. How do you balance the trade-offs, the choices amongst character, ability, and potential?
You know, you have to fight the urge a lot. Number one for us is character. You know, it's we want kids who care and kids who really are interested in becoming part of this tradition here at the university. Ability has to be there, obviously, right? We want to play at a high level. The competitive in nature and ability have to go hand in hand. You can have all the ability in the world, but if you're not competitive, you won't get any better. So typically when we recruit, if we feel a kid is very, very competitive, but maybe a little raw for us and needs time to develop, if he's a worker, eventually he's going to surpass the guy that it maybe has more ability than him, but doesn't work as hard. So that's really what we're interested in seeing as well. And you always see potential in players. There's something about certain guys. Maybe it's their size. Maybe it's their motor. Maybe it's just their attitude and effort that you see when you watch them play and how they greet their teammates and what type of teammate they are. So again, you know, if you can combine the three, great, very difficult. But character has to be number one, because in any team sport, you look at basketball, football, we were talking about Australian rules football before, the team has to take precedent. No one is above the team. No one's above, is bigger than the team. And if you get a bunch of guys that are unselfish in nature, that are also competitive and humble, if for us in lacrosse, there's still only one ball. That doesn't change from high school to, we only have two balls, and you have to play team offense and you have to play team defense, and you have to be part of something that's bigger than you. And you have to be willing to mention egos before, put aside your ego for the betterment of the team. That's how we're going to be successful here at UMass. And I think when you get strong character people who care about who they represent, not just the university or a program and alums, but their families, their hometowns, their teachers at home, their coaches at home. You know, when they get here, they know they represent those folks. Even if in the paper and it's UMass men's lacrosse player, all those people at home are extremely proud to read that. So that's part of their responsibility as well, to represent them in a first-class manner, as it is for us.
Greg, I think one of the fascinating things about talking to you is you're one of the longest tenured coaches in the D1 programs nationally in America. You're heading into your, if I've got my math right, is it 28 years?
This is the 29th year as the head coach and my 31st year here at the university.
I mean, it's an amazing level of longevity, and you would have seen so many ups and downs and sideways and successes and failures. But also through that period, there must have been times when your energy dipped and your focus dipped. I mean, maybe there wasn't, but if there was...
No, there was.
Okay. There was. So hadn't you managed to reset yourself? Was there anything that you did that worked really well?
Number one, I leaned on my family when I had those opportunities, right? To go home and, when the kids were young, they had no idea if we won or lost, or I was bummed out about something or up about something, that they didn't care. Their love was unconditional, and as well as my wife. So you lean on each other as a staff as well, right? We're in this together as a staff. And if something's going wrong or we're not operating at an optimal level, then we have to try to stick together, just as we ask our team to stick together and fight through it. Lacrosse is, I think, most athletics, it's very cyclical. When we come back in the fall after a long summer, right, you get energized in the summer, you do a lot of recruiting, but you do get some time off and some family time. And then fall's energizing because it's a new team and you have new players and it's, we're practicing, but it really doesn't count to anything, in terms of wins and losses. So it's energizing. And then the month of December, around the holidays, Thanksgiving and Christmas and New Year's, you sort of get yourself ready for what's going to happen in January in season, and you're re-energized there. And again, spring is a grind. It's difficult. But again, you don't have a lot of time to kind of sit back and just exhale. We talk about that all the time, guys. This is not the right time to exhale, right? We're still inhaling. We exhale when the season's over. But then you get that in the summer where you can regenerate your batteries and, focus a little bit on recruiting and look to the future.
You talked about your family in that answer, and I understand you've got two children. Wondering, as they step out into the world and start taking on building careers and moving towards leadership positions of their own, what advice, if any, that you have for them when it comes to leadership?
Yeah, so some of the advice goes unheard, right? Not only when they're teenagers, but now they're in their 20s. So I think they may be listening to mom and dad a little bit more now than they did 10 years ago. But I would say, don't try to be somebody else. Be yourself. Be who you are. There's so many ways to lead in this life. And I think for my kids, is number one would be to lead by example. When I talk to them, lead by example always, because I think that's the number one thing. If you're in the workplace, that when people are watching, if you're doing things right, if you are professional, if you're energetic, people are going to follow you, but it's also contagious and people will join you. And that's really what you want to do. That's what leadership is. It's not barking orders. It's having people join you and become part of your team and become part of what you believe in.
Maybe one last question, if I could. Greg, before I let you get back to your day of weights and training and getting ready for the season ahead, but 29th season, let's say there's 20 more to go. So in the distant future.
I'm not sure about that.
Well, at some point you may retire, or maybe you never will. But we talked about it a little bit earlier, but I'd like to circle back and ask you the question directly. What's the legacy that you hope you've left with all of these wonderful men, and I guess some women too, that have been through your program?
As I mentioned before, number one core value is hard work, right? Work hard, good things will come, right? Focus, focus on what's important to you, right? Believe in the people around you that are supporting you, but also possess a certain amount of integrity, personal integrity and professional integrity, right? Again, do things right. I've always tried to have that integrity as a person, but also as a coach and treating people. I was treated by Coach Garber incredibly fair, right? He was fair to everybody. He treated you like you were his son. And I hope that the players feel the same. And everybody that's come across here, coaches, players, the young woman that worked in our office, the young men that have worked in our office as well, feel the same way and feel like that we treated them with respect and gratitude for what they do for us.
Greg, it's been great chatting with you and learning a little bit more about UMass and the great program you've got going on there. And I wish you all the best for the season ahead.
Thanks so much, Paul. It's going to be exciting. So we're looking forward to it. Appreciate it.
Hi, everyone. You have been listening to the great coach, Greg Cannella. I hope you enjoyed it as much as we did and took out a few things that you could bring to your own dinner table, locker room, or boardroom table for discussion. And just before we go, if you have any feedback, then please let us know. Just like Rowan Pipple, who kept it short and sweet and said, "Great, thanks for sharing." Thanks, Rowan. The interaction with the people around the world who listen gives us great energy. And so if you have any feedback or comments, please let us know. And if they're positive ones, then let your friends know too. All the details on how to connect with us are in the show notes or on our website, thegreatcoachespodcast.com.